Hello everyone, and welcome to the History of Scotland, Episode 8, The Rise of the Kingdom of Alba. Now, first off, I think I owe you all a massive apology for being away from doing these podcasts the past few months. I've been caught up busy doing some work and kind of fighting off the coronavirus stints and just sort of enjoying a bit of out time with friends, family, what have you, so I haven't really got time to kind of sit down on my PC and get in the record on the go. But good news is I am back. I'm back with a bit more of a consistent schedule. Next week, I'm going to be getting some friends to come on. And we're going to be talking about Viking era, kind of get some proper history written and to kind of tie up the Viking era before we properly move on. Even though this episode is just going to be based on the Kingdom of Alba and a particular king, the next episode will be going a little bit back, kind of tying up the Viking sagas, discussing what was true, what was not true, the folklore, etc. So that's where I've kind of been up to. I am going to commit back to these podcasts. The podcasts have actually been booming off massively, thousands of downloads, which I really appreciate the support on. And yeah, the goal, as always, is to tell the history of Scotland in a very episodic historical setting. And we're going to take our time with this because we're finally getting to a point in history now where we have a lot more information, a lot more sources, less biased sources. And we can start to paint a picture of Scotland in this time. So kind of a bit of a quick recap of where we did leave off. So we've kind of been a bit all over the place. Obviously, we circled back to the Romans, and then we had the Saxons invade. Then we had the Picts rise up and take a control of a lot of Scotland. And then we had all these other mini kingdoms in Scotland form as well. Then the Kingdom of Picts became kind of like the mainstay. And then the Kingdom of Picts then got taken over and became a, well, got subjugated really by the Kingdom of Northumbria. And then they kicked the Northumbrians out. Vikings invaded, hell broke loose, and we're here. So we're going to start off the Kingdom of Alba, maybe a bit of a jump, but this is where we start digging into proper Scottish history, start getting an idea of the heritage, the kings, the people, and start learning kind of how the Gaelic heritage starts changing a bit. Because you've got to remember, the Scots were from Ireland. We have the Gaelic, who were the Gaelic tribes north of the wall in the Roman times. And then we've obviously got Saxons, Vikings. It's all just a massive mix of people, just like the majority of England and Britain itself, really. So, and also before we start, yes, got a new microphone. Yes, I may sound a tiny bit different. Yes, I do sound gorgeous, I know. But hopefully this microphone does sound a tiny bit better than the previous one. I'm going to be looking into getting a proper recording mic for doing these, so don't worry about that. It may be a lot more crisper in the future. Anyway, without further ado, let's get stuck in. The Kingdom of Alba refers to the King of Scotland between the deaths of Donald II in 900 AD and of Alexander III in 1286 AD, which then led indirectly to the Scottish Wars of Independence, Robert de Bruce, and eventually the Bruce line from there. The name is one of convenience, and throughout this period, the elite and populace of the kingdom were predominantly Pictish, Gaels, or later Pictish Gaels, and Scoto-Norman, and differs markedly from the period of the Stuarts, in which the elite of the kingdom were, for the most part, speakers of Middle English, which later evolved and came to be called Lowland Scots. There's a lot of conflict, a lot of politics with that, and we're going to touch on that as we get to the Stuarts era in Scotland, so let's forget about that for the moment. Let's move on. There is no precise Gaelic equivalent for the English terminology Kingdom of Alba, as the Gaelic term means Kingdom of Alba. English speakers, scholars adopted the Gaelic name for Scotland to apply to a particular political period in Scottish history during the Middle Ages. So let's just have a quick recap before we jump into our first king and do a bit more of an in-depth look at this king. So we did have Kenneth the First MacAlpin. He is the Conqueror. He's the first king of the Picts. All right. So he's the son of Alpin, king of Del Rita. Then we have touched on him, by the way, in a previous podcast. Please go listen to the earlier ones if you haven't listened to it yet to get an idea of where we are at in this story. Then we had his son. The son of the Alpin king of Del Rita, so the brother of Kenneth, which was Donald I. Okay, so Donald I ruled from 858 AD to 862 AD. All right, so only 4 years. Again, he was a brother of Kenneth, so Kenneth kind of set the groundwork for this, getting things rolling. Again, we touched on in a previous episode, and his brother did rule 4 years, but then sadly died. Then we had Constantine I. All right. Constantine I ruled from 862 to 877 AD. He was a son of Kenneth I, and he was quite known as the Wine Bountiful. All right. Then we had another king called Eadh. All right. He literally only ruled for a year. Again, son of Kenneth I. Then we had a potential son of Donald I called Giric. Again, he only ruled for 10 years. All right. Known as the Son of Fortune. And then we had a potential grandson of Kenneth I, known as Achode, and he only ruled for potentially maybe a year. Historians and sources are very skeptical on that part, so take that part with a pinch of salt. We're not kind of sure on the time periods he did rule from. But now on to the man himself, the person who we are touching on today's story, and we're going to be diving into an in-depth look, and we're going to be trying to do this with each of the Scottish kings and Pictish, Albanian kings, sorry, that we come across. I want to do an overview, in-depth look, talk about their timeline, and then we'll progress from there. We may stop after, a king or two and talk about the current state of affairs, like where is Scotland in this time period compared to England, Ireland, Europe, obviously the France and Scottish alliance against England, things like that, global politics to set the scene on the grandest stage, so to speak. All right, so Donald II of Scotland. Donald became king on the death or deposition of Giric, the date of which is not certainly known, but usually placed in 889 AD. The Chronicle of the Kings of Alba reports Dobbius, son of Constantine, held the kingdom for 11 years, 889 to 900 AD. The Northmen wasted Pictland at this time. In his reign, a battle occurred between the Danes and the Scots, where the Scots had a victory. He was killed by the Gentlies, which is another tribe. It has been suggested that the attack on Duntar, rather than being a small raid by a handful of pirates, may be associated with the ravaging of Scotland attributed to Harold Fairhair in the prophecy. The Prophecy of Brechin places Donald's death at Duntar, but appears to attribute it to the Gaels rather than the Norsemen. Other sources report he died at Forres. Donald's death is dated to 900 AD by the Annals of Ulster and the Chronicles of Scotia, where he is called King of Alba rather than King of Picts. He was buried on Iona. Like his father Constantine, he died a violent death at a premature age. The change from the King of Picts to King of Alder is seen as indicating a step towards the Kingdom of Scots, but historians, whilst divided as to when this change should be placed, do not generally attribute it to Donald in a view of his epithet. The consensus view is that the key changes occurred in the reign of Constantine II, but the reign of Giric has also been proposed. The Chronicle of the Kings of Alba has Donald succeeded by his cousin Constantine II. Donald's son Malcolm, Malcolm MacDonald, was later king as Malcolm I. The Prophecy of Brechin appears to suggest that another king reigned for a short while between Donald II and Constantine II, saying half a day will take sovereignty. All right. Possible confirmation of this exists in the Chronicum of Scotorum as well, where the death of Ed, King of Picts, in the battle against Umiah is reported in 904 AD. This, however, is thought to be an error referring to perhaps a different ruler at that time. All right. Compared to the neighbouring Ireland and Anglo-Saxon England, few records of 9th and 10th century events in Scotland survive. The main local source from this period is the Chronicle of the Kings of Alba, a list of kings from Kenneth MacAlpin, died 858 AD, to Kenneth II, died 995 AD. The list survives in the Popliteum Manuscript, a 13th century compilation, originally simply a list of kings with reign lengths. The other details contained in the Popliteum manuscript version were added in the 10th and 12th centuries. In addition to this, later kings' lists survive. The earliest genealogical records of the descendants of Kenneth MacAlpin are made date from the end of the 10th century, but their value lies more in the context. Context is everything, guys, and the information they provide about the interests of those whom they were compiled than in the unreliable claims they contain. For narrative history, the principal sources are the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles, which we all know and love, and the Irish annals. The evidence from the charters created in the Kingdom of England provides occasional insight into the events in Scotland. While Scandinavian sagas describe events in 10th century Britain, their value as sources of historical narrative rather than documents of social history is disputed. Mainland European sources rarely concern themselves with affairs in any part of the British Isles, and even less commonly with events in Scotland. But the life of St. Cuthbert of Metz, a work of hagiography written in Germany at the end of the 10th century, provides plausible details of the saint's early life in North Britain. While the sources for northeastern Britain, the lands of the Kingdom of Northumbria, and the former Pictland are limited and late, those for the areas on the Irish Sea and the Atlantic coast, the modern regions of northwest England and all of northern and western Scotland, are non-existent, and archaeology and toponology are of primary importance for this. All right. The dominant kingdom in eastern Scotland before the Viking Age was the northern Pictish kingdom of Forti on the shores of the Moreau Firth. By the 9th century, as we know, the Gaels of Derrida were subject to the kings of Forti of the family, and they were dominated up until 789 AD and perhaps earlier, from around 730 AD. The dominance of this came to an end in 839 AD with a defeat by Viking armies reported by the Annals of Ulster, in which King Uno of Forti and his brother Bran, Constantine's nephews, together with the King of Delrita and almost innumerable, were killed. These deaths led to a period of instability lasting a decade as several families attempted to establish their dominance in Pictland. By around 848 AD, Kenneth MacAlpin had emerged as the winner. Later, national myth made Kenneth MacAlpin the creator of the Kingdom of Scotland, the founding of which was dated from 843 AD, the year in which he was said to have destroyed the Picts and inaugurated a new era. The historical record for the 9th century Scotland is meagre, but the Irish Annals and the 10th century Chronicle of the Kings of Alba agree that Kenneth was a Pictish king and call him King of Picts at his death. The same style is used as Kenneth's brother, Donald I, and his sons, Constantine I and VIII. The kingdom ruled by Kenneth's descendants, older works used the name House of Alpin to describe them, but descent from Kenneth was the defining factor. Irish sources referring to Clan MacAlpin, or the clan of Kenneth MacAlpin, lay to the south of the previously dominant kingdom of Forti. Centred in the lands around the River Tay, the extent of Kenneth's nameless kingdom is uncertain, but it certainly expanded from the Firth of the Forth in the south to the mouth in the north. Whether it extended beyond the mountainous spine of North Britain is unclear. The core of the kingdom was similar to the old countries of Mins, Forth, Perth, Fife, King Cross. Among the chief centres named in the records are Dunkeld, probably the seat of the bishop of the kingdom. Kenneth's son Constantine died in 876, as we know, probably killed fighting against a Viking army which came north from Northumbria in 874 AD. According to the King's List, he was counted the 70th and last king of the Picts in later times, Britain and Ireland at the end of the 9th century. In 899 AD, Alfred the Great, King of Wessex, died, leaving his son Edward the Elder as ruler of England south of the River Thames, and his daughter Alfred and son-in-law Alfred ruling the western English part of Mercia. The situation in the Danish kingdoms of the Eastern Kingdom is less clear. King Ulfric was probably ruling in East Anglia, but no dates can reliably be assigned to the successors of Guthric of York in Northumbria. It is known that Guthric was succeeded by Sigurd and Cnut, although whether these men ruled jointly or one after the other is uncertain. Northumbria may have been divided by this time between the Viking kings in York and local rulers, perhaps represented by Eduf, based at Bamburgh, who controlled the lands from the River Tyne or the River Tees to the Forth in the north. In Ireland, Flann Senior, married to Constantine's aunt, was dominant. The years around 900 AD represent a period of weakness among the Vikings and the Norse Gaels of Dublin. Their reports have been divided between two rival leaders. In 894 AD, one group left Dublin, perhaps settling on the Irish seacoast of Britain between the River Mersey and the Firth of the Clyde. The remaining Dubliners were expelled in 902 AD. by his son and soon after appeared in Western and Northern Britain. To the southwest of Constantine lands lay the Kingdom of Strathclyde. This extended north into the Lennox, east of the River Forth, and south into the Southern Uplands. In 900 AD, it was probably ruled by King Dwyfol. The situation of the Gaelic kingdoms of Deirdre Rita in Western Scotland is uncertain. No kings are known by name after Ed MacMonitor. The Frankish source may record the conquest of the Inner Hebrides, the seaward port of Deirdre Rita, by the Northmen in 849 AD. In addition to these, the arrival of new groups of Vikings from Northern and Western Europe was still commonplace. Whether there were Viking or Norse Gaelic kingdoms in the Western Isles or North Isles at this time is debated. All right, so let's move on. We're now going to touch on Aedh. All right, so the early Aedh, Constantine's father, succeeded Constantine's uncle and namesake Constantine the First in 876 AD, but was killed in 878 AD. Aedh's short reign is glossed as being of no importance by most kings' lists, although the date of the birth is nowhere recorded. Constantine II cannot have been born any later than the year after his father's death in 879 AD. His name may suggest that he was born a few years earlier during the reign of his uncle Constantine I. After Aedh's death, there is a two-decade gap until the death of Donald II in 900 AD, during which nothing is reported in the Irish annals. The entry for the reign between Aedh and Donald II is corrupt in the Chronicle of the Kings of Alba, and in this case, the Chronicle is at a variance with every other king list. According to the Chronicle, Aedh was followed by Ecgwaed, grandson of Kenneth, who is somehow connected with Gyrric, but all the other lists say that Gyrric ruled after Aedh and made great claims for him. Gyrric is not known to have been a kinsman of Kenneth's, although it has been suggested he was married to him by marriage. The major changes in Pictland, which began at about this time, have been associated by Alex Wolfe and Archie Duncan with Gyrric's reign. Wolfe suggests that Constantine and his cousin Donald may have passed Gyrric's reign in exile in Ireland, where their aunt was wife of two successive high kings of Ireland. Gyrric died in 889 AD. If he had been in exile, Constantine may have returned to Pictland, where his cousin Donald II became king. Donald's reputation is suggested by the epithet, a word used as violent madmen and mad bulls, attached to him in the 11th century writings, echoed by his description in the prophecy. Wars with the Viking kings in Britain and Ireland continued during Donald's reign, and he was probably killed fighting yet more Vikings at Duntar in Mearns in 900 AD. Constantine then finally succeeded him as king. Again, it's very hard to depict a lot of the kings and what happened with each of them individually in this era. Hopefully we'll get to a stage where we can spend three or four more episodes on a single era and a single king. But unfortunately, at this period of time in history, kings were going out like it was coronavirus. So, Vikings and bishops. The cult of St. Columba and its relics were associated with the victory in the battle. Right, and it was lost in the 8th century, which held the relics of Columba, is known to have been carried into the battle from the reign of King William the Liar onwards. The earliest event recorded in the Chronicle Kings of Alba and Constantine's reign is an attack by the Vikings and the plundering of Dunkeld and all of Albina in his third year. This is the first use of the word Albania from the latter form of the old Irish Alba in the Chronicle, which until then describes the lands ruled by descendants of Synod as Bactavia. These Northmen could have been some of those who were driven out of Dublin in 902 AD, or were the same group who had defeated Domnall in 900 AD. The Chronicle states that the Northmen were killed in Strathearn, which is confirmed by the annals of Ulster, which caused the death of Amir, grandson of Amar, and many others at the hands of the men of Fortu in 904 AD. This Amar was the first of the Ul-Amar, the grandsons of Amar, to be reported. Three more grandsons of Amar appeared later in Constantine's reign. The fragmentary annals of Ireland contain an account of the battle, and this is attributed to the defeat of the Norsemen to the intercession of the St. Columba following fasting and prayer. An entry in the Chronicle Scrotum under the year 904 AD may possibly contain a corrupted reference to this battle. The next event reported by the Chronicles of the Kings of Alba is dated to 906 AD. This records that King Constantine and the bishop at the Hill of Belief near the royal city of Scone, and pledged themselves that laws and disciplines of the faith and the laws of churches and gospels should be kept partia cum Scotus. The meaning of this entry and its significance have been subject to debate. The moot hill at Scone, perhaps at the Hill of Belief at 906 AD, Scone being the place where Scottish kings come to get crowned. Alright, and again, you'll see that in later history. The idea that this gathering agreed to uphold Irish laws governing the church has suggested that it was an important step in a Gaelicization of the lands east of Durham Albion. Others have proposed that the ceremony is some way endorsed Constantine's kingship, prefiguring later royal inaugurations at Scone, as previously mentioned. Alternatively, if the bishop was appointed by Giric, it may be that the gathering was intended to heal a rift between the king and the church. All right. Following the events of Scone, there is likely of substance reported for a decade. A story in the Fragmentary Annals of Ireland, perhaps referring to the events sometime after 9/11 AD, claims that Queen Ethelred, who ruled in Mercia, allied with the Irish and northern rulers against the Northmen on the Irish sea coast of Northumbria. The Annals of Ulster record the defeat of an Irish fleet from the Kingdom of Uild by the Vikings on the coast of England at about this time. In this period, the Chronicle of the Kings of Alba reports the death of Cormac MacCulbian, King of Munster, in the 8th year of Constantine's reign. This is followed by an undated entry which was formally read as, in his time, Donal, King of the Strathclyde Britons, and Donal, son of Edward, was elected. This was thought to record the election of a brother of Constantine named Donal to the kingship of the Britons of Strathclyde, and was seen as early evidence of the domination of Strathclyde by the kings of Alba. So, as in, the king of Alba's brother is now in charge of Strathclyde, which is obviously to the west part of Scotland. All right. So, there are more reports of Viking fleets in the Irish Sea from 914 AD onwards. By 916 AD, fleets under Sigtryg and Ragnall, said to be grandsons of Imma, this is very strongly to belong to the same Imma kindred as the Imma who was killed in 904 AD, mentioned earlier, were very active in Ireland. Sigtryg inflicted a heavy defeat on the armies of Leinster and retook Dublin in 917 AD. The following year, Ragnall appears to have returned across the Irish Sea, intent on establishing himself as King of York. The only precisely dated event in the summer of 918 AD is the death of Queen Ethelred on the 12th of June 1980 at Tamworth, Staffordshire. Ethelred had been negotiating with the Northumbrians to obtain their submission, but her death put an end to this, and her successor, her brother, Edward the Elder, was occupied with securing control of Mercia, Edward the Elder being King of Mercia as well. Alright. The northern part of Northumbria, perhaps the whole kingdom, had probably been ruled by Aldered, son of Edewulf, since 913 AD. Faced with Ragnall's invasion, Aldered came north seeking assistance from Constantine. The two advanced south to face Ragnall, and this led to a battle somewhere on the banks of the River Tyne, probably at Corbridge, where Deer Street crosses the river. The Battle of Corbridge appears to have been indecisive, the Kings of Chronicle of Kings of Alba alone in giving Constantine the victory. Again, it was indecisive. The report of the battle in the Annals of Ulster says that none of the kings or Mormers among the men of Alba were killed. This is the first surviving use of the word Mormer, other than the knowledge that Constantine's kingdom had its own bishop or bishops and royal villas. This is the only hint to the institution of the kingdom. After Corbridge, Ragnall enjoyed only a short respite. In the south, Alfred's son Edward had rapidly secured control of Mercia and had a borough constructed at Bakewell in the Peak District from which his armies could easily strike north. An army from Dublin, led by Ragnall's kingman Sigtryg, struck at northwestern Mercia in 919 AD, but in 920/921 AD, Edward met with Ragnall and other kings. The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle states that these kings chose Edward as father and lord. Among the other kings present, Constantine, Eldred, son of Elderwolf, and the King of Strathclyde as well. Here again, a new term appears in record, the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, for the first time using the word Scotus, from which Scots derives, to describe the inhabitants of Constantine's kingdom in its report of these events. Edward died in 924 AD. His realm appeared to have been divided, with the West Saxons recognizing a reward, with the Mercians chose Athelstan, who had been raised at Ethelred's court. Ethelred died within weeks of his father, and Athelstan was inaugurated as king of all Edward's lands in 925 AD. Athelstan being one of the great kings of England, all right, he did start to take control of most of England and kick out the Danes in the Danelaw. He's a very famous king. I suggest you read up about him. We'll touch on him in a little bit in terms of how he affected our Scottish brethren. By 926 AD, Sitric had eventually acknowledged Athelstan as overlord, adopting Christianity and marrying a sister of Athelstan at Tamworth. Within the year, he appears to have forsaken his new faith and repudiated his wife, but before Athelstan could respond, Sitric died suddenly in 927 AD. Classic Viking fashion, they take on Christianity and then they quickly backtrack. His kingman, perhaps brother, Gofraid, who had remained as his deputy in Dublin, came from Ireland to take power in Europe but failed. Athelstan moved quickly, seizing much of Northumbria. In less than a decade, the Kingdom of the English had become by far the greatest power in Britain and Ireland, perhaps stretching as far as the Firth of the Forth. John of Worcester's chronicles suggest that Athelstan faced opposition from Constantine, from Owen, and the Welsh kings. He writes that together with Sitric's young son, they fled north and received refuge from Constantine, which led to a war with Athelstan. A meeting at Emot Bridge on the 12th of July 1927 AD was sealed by an agreement that Constantine and these sons would renounce all idolatry. That is, they would not ally with the Viking kings. William states that Athelstan stood godfather to a son of Constantine, probably Idulf, during this conference. Athelstan followed up his advances in the north by securing the recognition of the Welsh kings. For the next 7 years, the records of the events of the north is blank. Athelstan's court was attended by the Welsh kings, but not by Constantine or Owen. This absence of record means Athelstan's reasons for marching north against Constantine in 934 are unclear. Athelstan's invasion is reported in a brief by the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle and later chronicles such as John of Worcester, and they add the detail to this account. Athelstan's army began gathering at Winchester by 28th of May 934 AD and travelled north to Nottingham by the 7th of June. He was accompanied by many leaders, including the Welsh kings. From Mercia, the army continued to Chesterley Street before resuming the march accompanied by a fleet of ships. Owen was defeated, and the Simeon states that the army went as far north as Dunter and Fortu, while the fleet is said to have raided Caithness, but which a much larger area, including Sutherland, is probably intended. It is unlikely that Constantine's personal authority exceeded so far north, so the attacks were probably directed at his allies, comprising simple looting expeditions. The annals of these state that the Scottish men compelled Athelstan to return without any great victory. When Henry of Huntingdon claims that the English faced no opposition, a negotiated settlement might have ended matters. According to John of Worcester, a son of Constantine was given as a hostage to Athelstan, and Constantine himself accompanied the English king on his return south. He witnessed a charter with Athelstan at Buckingham on the 13th of September 934 AD, in which he described as a king acknowledgement of Athelstan's overlordship, the only place there is ever a record of such description. However, there is no record of Constantine having ever submitted to Athelstan's overlordship, or that he considered himself as such. The following year, Constantine was again in England at Athelstan's court, this time at Sinchester, where he appears as a witness as the first of several kings, followed by Owen and a different king who subscribed to the diplomat. At Christmas of 935 AD, Owen was once more at Athelstan's court along with the Welsh kings, but Constantine was not. His return to England less than 2 years later would be very, very different circumstances. Bamburgh and after. Following his departure from Athelstan's court after 935 AD, there is no further report of Constantine until 937 AD. In that year, together with Owen of Dublin, Constantine invaded England. The resulting Battle of Bamburgh is reported in the Annals of Ulster as follows. A great battle, lamentable and terrible, was cruelly fought, in which fell uncounted thousands of the Northmen, and on the other side a multitude of Saxons fell, but Athelstan, the king of Saxons, obtained a great victory. The battle was remembered in England and a generation later as the Great Battle. When reporting the battle, the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle abandons its usual terse style in favour of a heroic poem vouching the great victory. In this hooray, Constantine, by now around 60 years of age, is said to have lost a son in battle, a claim which the Chronicles of Alba confirms. The Annals give his name as Sulic. Full of its fame, the site of the battle is uncertain, and several sites have been advanced, with Bramber on the Wirral the most favoured location. Bramber, for all it may have been famous on bloody battles, sold nothing. On the 27th of October 939 AD, Athelstan, the pillar of dignity of the Western worlds, in the words of the Annals of Ulster, died at Malmesbury. He was succeeded by his brother Edmund, then aged 18. Athelstan's reign, seemingly made safe by the victory of Bramber, collapsed in a little more than a year from his death when Aemlab returned from Ireland and seized Northumbria, and the Mercian Danelaw Edmund spent the remainder of Constantine's reign rebuilding his kingdom. For Constantine's last years as king, there is only the meagre record of the Chronicle of Kings of Alba. The death of Athelstan is reported, as are two others. The first of these in 938 is the Mormont of Angus, and also a MacAlpin kingsman as well. Abdication and posterity. By the early 1940s, Constantine was an old man in his late 60s or 70s. The Kingdom of Alba was too new to be said to have a customary rule of succession, but Pictish and Irish precedents favoured an adult successor descended from the Kenneth MacAlpin line. Constantine's surviving son, Indulf, probably baptised in 927 AD, would have been too young to be a serious candidate for the kingship in the early 1940s, and the obvious heir was Constantine's nephew, Malcolm I. As Malcolm was born no later than 901 AD, by the 1940s he was no longer a young man and may have been impatient. Willingly or not, the 11th century scholar, Averse History in the form of supposed prophecy, states that it was not a voluntary decision, and Constantine abdicated in 943 AD and entered a monastery, leaving the kingdom to Malcolm. Wow. Imagine that, being the king, fighting the Vikings, fighting the Saxons, and then when you're giving up, you go to a monastery and, you know, give the king to a fellow kingsman. Although his retirement may have been involuntary, the life and the prophecy can portray Constantine as a devout king. The monastery to which Constantine retired and where he is said to have been an abbot was probably that of St. Andrew's. This has been refounded in his reign and given to the reforming of Culdi movement. All right. 7 years later, the Chronicle of Kings of Alba says Malcolm I plundered the England as far as the River Tees, and he seized a multitude of people and many herds of cattle, and the Scots called this raid a victory. But others say that Constantine made this raid asking of the king, Malcolm I, that the kingship should be given for him for a week's time so he could visit England. In fact, it was Malcolm who made the raid, but Constantine incited him, as I have said. Constantine's death in 952 AD is recorded by the Irish Annals, who enter it among other areas. His son Indulf would become king on Malcolm's death. The last of Constantine's certain descendants to be king of Alba was his great-grandson, Constantine III. Another son had died at Bramber, and according to General Worcester, a different person was married to a daughter of Constantine. It's possible Constantine had other children, but like the name of his wife or wives, this has not been recorded. The form of the kingdom which appeared in Constantine's reign continued in much the same way until the revolution in the 12th century, as which his reforms, his political legacy, and was the creation of a new form of Scottish kingship that lasted for more than two centuries after his death. And with that, we come to the end of today's episode. Thank you all for listening. On the next episode, we're going to be taking a special look at the Viking era in England, discussing the folklore behind it, the truth, the sources, trying to pull together the most historical view on what happened in Viking Britain, what happened in Scotland, England, etc. All I can really say now, guys, is thank you all for listening. The podcast is, as always, available on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and YouTube. If you haven't already, please do leave a review. And let me know if there's any historical clarifications I need to make on the next episode, anything I've said incorrectly that I need to correct as well. Next episode, I said, we'll have a couple of guests on discussing this. It won't just be myself discussing the Viking era. It'll be a couple of friends of mine who also are into history. So it'll be a good little fun little episode. And then after that, we'll carry on with the Kingdom of Alba, discuss about Malcolm I and then his descendants. Other than that, guys, all I left to say is I apologise for the lack of uploads of this podcast. We are going to get more of a consistent schedule on the go and stop cracking on with this history. But yeah, have a great week, guys. Thank you all for listening. Be sure to leave any reviews, and I will see you all in the next week. Stay safe and stay well. Bye bye.